who's the best show here?
Best show! Best show! Best show!
The Linux Night Tech Show is on.
Is on.
Your link to GNU Linux and the latest technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Free software, free speech, open technology,
and open mic.
I love it.
Now, live from the Linux Link Tech Show studios, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up and take it away.
No stinking Pat, Alan, and Link. Good evening, everyone. This is Trolls from Denmark. And the guys apparently decided to take a break, so you'll have to do with me tonight. And with me tonight I have Alexandro Colorado, or JCA. How are you tonight, man?
Hey, people. How you doing? Yes.
So who are you, in case the people listening don't have a clue?
I'm in Mexico, south of the border.
And what do you do?
What I do? Well, right now I'm chilling here in my office, pretty much alone by myself. Everybody's gone. And I'm supposed to be a sysadmin, but yeah. Most of my time I spend time doing open office work and whatever. But you all guys know me.
Yeah, we mentioned you noticed you in the forum, I think. And for myself, I'm just a random TLLTS listener who happens to be a little bit enthusiastic about the show and be quite active in the forum and all kinds of stuff. And now I'm doing the show for tonight, so I guess that's all good. And if the lazy ass that is Captain Obvious 999, also known as Devin, would mind showing his lazy ass up, he might join again, us too. And Riddlebox is gonna chime in time to time, because his friend apparently got his driver's license taken from him. Cops busted his ass.
If he's gonna be asking live drug dealers if they run Linux on their business.
Yeah, I was gonna say live reporting.
Yeah. So, what's going on, trolls?
Yeah, I was gonna ask you about that, so people know, the usual cast of suspects, Pat, Alan, Dan, and Link will be back in about 3 or 4 weeks, and because they decided to take a break because Dan is busy with work, and Link's busy with moving. Pat's got new kit. Congrats, Pat. And Alan, he's never around.
Although
anyway,
they just told us the real story, why they're not getting in the show now. Can you hear? They want to feature on this exclusive website.
Oh, yeah. But whatever. Anything new in OpenOffice?
There's been a couple of news on the Open. There's also a couple of news on the OpenOffice camp. The Google Summer of Code just launched this past week. And it's already been some reports of people actually making some inroads. Some of the cool stuff are actually a native port of the OpenOffice interface to the Aqua on OS X, which will make arguably OpenOffice faster. And basically, I've just been reading here random notes about what's going on in the camp. Most of the developers went to the, what's that show? You're the Mac fan. What's the name of the show? The WDCC or something like that from Apple?
Yeah, Worldwide DIC Conference or something.
Yeah. So they all gather together around Uncle Steve, and he start by making announcements left and right. And you like that.
You think it's after 20 years he'd be tired of that stuff?
Yeah, well, ask them, man.
Yeah.
I'm not a Stevie Joby fan boy or whatever.
Yeah, well, I'm sure Leo Laporte's wetting his pants already.
Yeah.
So, anyway, you mentioned the Aquaport of Open Office. Why are you guys doing this?
Well, basically, because pretty much these other, I guess, fork from NeoOffice was beating our ass out because a lot of the Mac users were pretty, they're not up to the so satisfied on the OpenOffice dependency on X11 on the Mac. So basically, before you put OpenOffice on OS X, you need to download X11, and then you can run an OpenOffice. So the alternative was this other office suite called NeoOffice, which was a fork of OpenOffice. And so they decided to go that route, basically. And now more developers are actually working on making a native Aqua interface, so X11 is no longer a need on OS X, so they can have a complete office suite.
So is there any benefit to this for free software besides just, you know, potential for adoption of ODF?
Well, you're improving free software. You're improving free software, and when you're improving free software, more users will come to use it. Most macOS users don't. They will gladly, I guess, start using OpenOffice if they didn't need to have so many loops to use it. It's basically taking users out of my OS X Microsoft Office user base, and everything that is taking users out of Microsoft is a good thing. So, yeah, there are certainly advantages.
Okay, how far along is it?
Well, actually, the project for porting OpenOffice started last year. They basically started porting the 2.x branch into OpenOffice. Then they proceed to actually build better rendering engines, more easier installer, better packaging, because before it was just like a Java binary. Usually when you download Java software, you'll just get a .bin. And now you get a native DMG package installed in Office. So they've been doing minor improvements until right now. It's actually pretty stable and pretty fast compared to like a couple of years ago.
Okay, but just a question for you: would you see Apple as a friend of open source or free software?
I don't know. I don't own a Mac. I don't like people that own a Mac. No, that's not true. But I don't
don't like people that own a Mac.
Yeah.
You don't like Link, and Alan is what you're saying.
No, Link hates freedom.
That's right. Link hates freedom. Yeah.
So, not true. But, for real, I just don't, people here in Mexico don't even use Macs. I mean, except for like a couple of them. It's not that popular here. And there's certain
companies
that just don't know. Well, yeah, but it's also that Apple doesn't have the branding, the distribution partners all over the world. So, yeah. So if Apple is not in XYZ country, I bet most people won't run that machine.
True. Well, like they say in the mafia, keep your friends close, but your enemies closer. So I guess that means porting OpenOffice.
So you run Vista now?
Vista. No, I actually run Fedora 7.
So how's that working for you?
I'll talk about that a little later on, actually. I plan to do that. But before that, I wanted to before I wanted to mention that, in case you haven't seen the news, Apple will be porting their Safari browser to Windows. And I'm not talking about this because it's Apple doing it, because I don't really could care less about Apple. But Safari, Apple's browser, is using KDE's KHTML rendering engine, which Conqueror uses to display web pages and, you know, to provide browsing functionality of the internet. But Apple, a few years ago, decided to use KHTML for their browser. And in the beginning of that, when they were contributing, contributing is probably the wrong word, but releasing their changes, they just dumped a big ass tarball on the on some website, and it was just too painful to go in and see what changes Apple had made. So, since it was a complete fork, so for a long time, it a lot of Apple's changes and improvements didn't get back to KDE. And at some points in KDE, developers really just gave up with the diplomacy and just said, "This sucks." And apparently Steve Jobs heard this complaint and did something about it. And now there's actually Apple running a CVS records ever since they first began doing their version of KHTML. So, and a bunch of improvements have made it back to KHTML in KDE. For example, ACID2 compliance. ACID2 is a CSS compliance test. So a little good has come out of it. And what I'm thinking is, if Apple is porting Safari to Windows, the bug fixes for KHTML in a Windows environment might make it to KDE. And
Yeah, I actually went into Gizmodo yesterday. I don't go to Gizmodo most of the times, but I also saw that a lot of people are pretty much the history is repeating itself. They most of the people or the users in Windows saying that Safari sucks. They have too many bugs, and I don't have Windows, so I can tell you that I haven't used it.
Beta for now. So it's supposed to be buggy.
Yeah, that's true also. But there's some security connectivity issues, though, as far as I read.
Yeah, true. But anyway, with KDE 4, KDE will actually be porting a number of their applications to Windows, including their libraries. So, for example, Conqueror will appear in Windows, Contact will appear on Windows, Amarok have already stated that they will be porting their media player to the Windows. So,
no, is that really true? Because I also saw some screenshots about a couple of years ago from the KDE community saying that they were going to port some KDE software to OS X. And I saw they ported KOffice, and I saw they ported, I think it was some team application. I can't remember if it was KOrganize or KContact, KMail. I think it was KMail. But saw them.
KDE's PIM application is basically a tie together of a bunch of other.
Well, it was a couple of years ago. It was before Contact came about. I mean, there were still distributed applications, yeah.
But here's the thing. With KDE 3 uses the version 3.3 something of the Qt libraries, Toltec's Qt GUI toolkit.
Qt.
And, And the problem here is that Qt for Unix and GNU Linux and BSD and so forth, or X11 as Trolltech called it, that's under the GPL, and it was GPL in September of 2000, and it was also under another license called the QPL, QPublic license, only the X11 version is under these licenses. The version for Windows and for Mac OS X is both under Trolltech's so-called, quote, commercial, quote, unquote, license. And I'll explain the quotes in a minute. But so it's been impossible to port KDE to Windows or applications to KDE applications to Windows because there's no free Qt for Windows or OS X. So what some people tried to do a few years ago is take the the free version, the free software version of Qt that was under the GPL and port that to Windows. But, you know, porting an X11 GUI framework to Windows is, it never got anywhere. Some people tried to use Cygwin and it kind of worked, but it didn't
take. Now, is that true? Let me tell you, now, is that true right now?
With Qt4 opposed to Qt3, it's under the GPL for both Windows, Mac OS 10, and X11 being GNU Linux and the BSDs and other Unixes like AIX, even SCO Unixware, and so forth. So with Qt4 right. and KD4, they have a free software version of Qt on all the platforms, so KD can run on everything, on all of them. And if with Qt, if you write your application in a platform neutral way, you can actually, it's just a recompile. You just have to recompile it to have it on Windows or have it on Mac OS 10 and on GNU Linux, for instance. And
actually, I know that's true because I was going to tell you a story here at work. My coworker that's actually right next to me here at the company, he's a Qt developer. Not really a Qt developer. He just likes to develop, and he's a little bit familiar with Qt. And he made this business application for tracking our tasks. And he used a Qt Designer and KDevelop, I think. And he wrote an application. He basically compiled it for Windows without even needing Windows on his machine. He just used QMake 4, and boom, he got the Windows binary as well as the Linux binary. So we can distribute around our team. Our team usually runs Windows, and some of us runs Linux. So we all have the same applications. I think that's pretty cool. But once said that, I mean, I know that there's a lot of toolkits that are cross-platform. I mean, I actually think they're more cross-platform toolkits than not that many cross-platform toolkits. I mean, so far I've seen like, I think WX widgets is cross-platform. GTK is ported to Windows also, and just so many toolkits out there that, well, of course, the Java toolkit, SWT and AWT and Swing or whatever. So I think there are more actually toolkits that will run multi-platform. PK even runs multi-platform, which is something that we usually use in Python.
Yeah, I'm actually not sure how complete the GTK port for Windows is. Sometimes I hear people saying it's a little bit buggy or something because think about it, Evolution, the GNOME groupware suite, Novell has talked about porting it to Windows, but they never got around to doing it. So it would seem to me that it is somewhat of a challenge porting a GTK application to Windows. I don't know for sure because I'm no developer, but it's just a guess. And I see MadDog39 saying in the IRC, and I'm quoting him here, GTK is a pain in the ass to develop within Windows. So I guess that kind of confirms what.
Well, for example, how big is GIMP? GIMP is a pretty complex application with different widgets and menus, and is that ported?
So is Evolution, I mean.
Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, maybe it's just developers not well enough into the project to actually do it. And it's funny because a lot of people, like in open source, usually what cool thing is going on, they will develop for it. Like they will have maybe half of an office suite and 10,000 different music players, you know?
Yeah, music players are the cool stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So right there you see what is the priority, you know? So I think that a lot of people are more inclined to doing a draw application at a photo manipulation application than doing an Outlook kind of application, at least for developers.
Of course, yeah.
So I think that's usually the key why Evolution is not on Windows right now. At least that's my theory, because I'm not a developer also.
Yeah. Because I think I heard Nat Friedman talking about porting Evolution.
I can tell you now that we within the OpenOffice community, we just haven't had enough developers excited about doing a native PIM application for OpenOffice. So I can see it right there. there's just not that many people wanting to do this kind of work.
Yeah, I see.
So, yeah. But what were
well,
you
I heard Nat Friedman. I heard Nat Friedman from Novell talking about porting Evolution to Windows over 3 years ago, I think. I think I read a mailing list post from 2003 or something. It's a really long time ago that they talk about it. And
yeah.
A lot of Novell's customers, I know, has asked for Evolution on Windows so that they can put Evolution out on their current Windows machines, then slowly switch to SUSE Linux Enterprise Desktop, for example. In the case of Novell, but I wouldn't recommend you use their distro for various reasons that we'll get into a little bit later. But not to get into a whole Novell discussion, but back to the QT issue. But as far as I see, it seems to me that QT is a really nice toolkit if you want to develop for both Windows, Mac OS X, and Linux, because it's just a recompile, like you say. And with KDE4, they're developing another set of libraries like Phonon and Solid, which are respectively multimedia and hardware interaction libraries that would allow, for example, you could write a DirectX backend to Phonon, so the KDE application, if they wanted to make a ping noise or a bong noise or something, they just say make a bong noise, and then Phonon takes care of having DirectX, a DirectX API, and subsystems play that ping noise through the sound system. And with the hardware interaction API, Solid it's called, KDE applications can know when the network is down. So for example, Kmail won't recheck for new email if the network is down, which is a cool thing, I think. So. With if you combine QT4 and the KDE4's library, you have an even wider set for cross-platform development. And I think KDE is a kind of a way to show people this. They're porting Conker and Contact, their groupware suite, to Windows, Mac, and Linux, which is, you know, going to further the use of free software, I hope.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think the new release, by the way, what do you think about the new release coming from KDE. So, I've been hearing a lot of things. Yeah. It's funny because when you ask a KDE people, he will tell you that what's new coming out is actually they're going to get more simple. But when you hear from other people saying, well, what's new from KDE is actually going to get more, I don't know, not complex precisely, but just more integration, I guess, from within the applications. So, I don't know what's your point.
Yeah.
I don't really follow KDE that close, but I wonder what is new coming from KDE 4.
I'd recommend, I don't like duplicating work and stuff like that, and since I'm not a KDE developer, I'm not the correct person to answer this, but if you want to know all that stuff, go and listen to Log Radio, the latest episode. They have an interview with Aaron Saigo, and they ask him exactly this. In a little more impolite way, but you know how it is.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah. But anyway, what I was trying...
Yeah. Go ahead.
But there was just one thing I'm wondering, if Apple ports Safari to Windows, then that might help Conker or KHTML a bit along with the jump to Windows. It's just a theory, you know, but hopefully it will turn out that way. I think actually KDE was talking about actually using Apple's version of KHTML for KDE4, but there was again a lot of things being talked about.
Right. So what do you think? Is that a good thing for Windows or for free software?
Porting.
Because that has to do with
Windows?
Our... Yeah.
Well, I think it's a little bit of a double-edged sword, you know, because it'll certainly expose more people to free software. You know, some people's going to say, hey, what's this Conker thing? And maybe find Conker cool, and then maybe take a look at Contact and so forth. And maybe
yeah,
even
but what about Safari, though?
Well, you know, there are a lot of Apple fanboys out there. There are people who love their iPods even though they use Windows. So maybe they're just going to say, hey, what's this Safari thing? Maybe a little bit of this Mac thing. So people are going to go probably like that and take a look. They're, of course, not going to see a big
Most Windows users are not
Safari.
Really happy But what I heard is that most Windows users are not really happy with the Mac applications. They are dog slow, like iTunes and QuickTime. Like they take over your computer, basically. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure Richard Stallman would argue that iTunes is spyware.
I think anybody will argue that iTunes is spyware.
That's true.
It runs dog slow. I mean, definitely wasting a lot of CPU cycles on what? Not playing music?
Yeah, it's like a Pentium-free press card in a software application.
Yeah.
But anyway, people say that Mac developers don't really know how to write Windows applications, but
neither
of us care.
Right now, Now, what were you talking about developing in Qt? One barrier that I think is that there's not that many C++ developers out there. And right now in the chat, I've seen Mad Dog actually posting a lot of PHP bindings or PHP bridges to the toolkit. So, I don't know. But the thing is that he posts gtk.php.net and phpqt.org. The problem is that PHP GTK has been on for a while, yet I haven't seen that many people actually developing on PHP GTK applications as opposed to Python GTK applications or Perl. So,
Is PHP the right language for desktop applications? That's what I'm kind of wondering.
Well, yeah, one of the problems is that PHP is not really object-oriented, even if PHP 5 is not fully object-oriented. However, Perl is not very object-oriented either, yet a lot of people develop applications on Perl and GTK. Especially SUSE used to have Perl all over the place for their GUI stuff. They're managing stuff.
Who you say?
SUSE.
No, Yast is not in Perl. Yast is not in Perl. It uses, it's in, it's, I'm pretty sure it's C++ or C.
Well, I think Yast was on Qt. Was it?
Yast is the toolkit at an agnostic. It's designed in a way so you just can add a plugin for whatever toolkit you wanted to use. And they are made I made a GNOME one right now, so in OpenSUSE 10.3 that would be Yast will look like a GNOME application. So Yast is really toolkit agnostic.
Right.
Smart thinking on the German engineers.
I don't
want to talk about Apple anymore. We've given them enough credit or enough for free press.
Well, one thing that actually I've been following close, especially from Qt, that is not really related with desktop, is the development in cell phone market. Like, I actually just recently went to this site I usually go to. It's called Linux Devices. Do you know it?
Yeah.
And they have a special article on what it was called, a SelfCon. Self is a group for Linux embedded devices from all these big companies, including Sony, IBM, and a whole lot of other companies. They came out together and make this consortium about just bringing Linux to appliances. So they will put Linux on their products. And they just recently have this self-conference where they usually talk about the future of Linux development on the cell phone market. And they basically go through a rundown of putting Qt and different toolkits, but especially Trolltech gave a big talk about Qtopia and the future on different cell phones. And one of the cell phones that actually are coming to the U.S. this year is the Rocker from Motorola. And that will be actually, might be the first Linux phone in the United States. So that looks pretty interesting. And I actually think, with all the iPhone buzz, that iPhone is actually bringing the concept of putting a full operating system on a cell phone. I mean, you can hate iPhone for whatever you want, but the concept of putting a fully Unix OS on a cell phone might bring other manufacturers to bring Linux faster to their cell phones.
Just might, you mean. I mean, most of the world don't have access to a PC, so they'll be using a cell phone to get on the Internet, like Jonathan Swarson's son have pointed out a few times.
Yeah. Even Java is doing that JavaFX for cell phones and stuff.
Funny
so.
You should mention that, because, Java, I mean, but because Trolltech just released a couple of, I think either was early this week or last week, they released the final version of Qt Jambi, which is Java integration of Qt. So you can write a Java application in using Trolltech's Qt that will look and feel like a Qt application and have all the advantages of Qt 4's advanced SVG rendering and all kinds of canvas stuff. So.
Yeah, that's cool.
And Java is on a shitload of cell phones as well.
True. Although cell phones were built, you have to think that cell phones are not like computers. It's not like you get the toolkit and you can run on any cell phone you have, or that used to have Java on it. So.
True.
So that really
But both Qt and Java can be used on cell phones, so it would be interesting if you could combine the two.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be good. But it really depends on the stack, because they are both developed for the cell phone doesn't mean they're going to work well. And I think it might run a little bit slow because you're counting the layers. You're counting the kernel, the API, which will be Qt, and then another layer for Java, which is not the fastest language out there, and that's a whole lot. Yeah. So, why you want to build a C++ base for a Java front end? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Especially when the toolkit covers pretty much the front end also.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Both interesting stuff, I think.
Yeah, it's pretty geeky. I think it's going to be good in the future, especially if they open the cell phone market. That people will actually run their own free software on their cell phone.
Yeah, it would be interesting to have Chinese people write applications for a cell phone.
Yeah. So.
But another thing I wanted to talk about, because this is an interesting one. A few weeks ago, Red Hat released a set of fonts which they call the Liberation fonts. And what this is basically a clone or drop-in replacement of Microsoft's TrueType web fonts, because Microsoft has a set of fonts that's typically used on web pages, and a lot of people will be, for years there has been some people have been taking Microsoft's fonts from Windows and using some scripts to install them on GNU Linux or BSD, but these fonts you couldn't distribute as part of a Linux distribution because these fonts are basically Microsoft's property, and I don't think they like having them used anything but in Windows. So what Red Hat has done has basically contracted a company that specializes in doing fonts to create these fonts, which replace like the Sans font and the Helvetica font, I think it's called, and fonts like that. They released it under the GPL with the font exception, so now you can actually have a truly free open ODF document because you have truly free fonts.
Yeah, actually I have mixed feelings about that because it's great that we have free fonts, but on the flip side, people are complaining that they're not compatible with OpenOffice. So my question is, why they don't build it compatible when they built it for OpenOffice? Because I guess that's one of the first applications you're going to use your free fonts.
Well, I'm using I have OpenOffice on my screen right now using Liberation Sans. Works fine.
Oh, really? Well, heard that... Liberation fonts are not compatible with
that can't be true. I have That can't be true. I'm typing JCA with that font in OpenOffice right now.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's great. Now, is that your Fedora Liberation?
Yeah, Fedora 7.
I mean, your Fedora version of OpenOffice. So they might have done some tweaks to.
Well, I'm not sure because. Not sure. I wouldn't want to touch OpenOffice because it's a beast to get just to compile.
Well, nobody compiles OpenOffice. Most of the OpenOffice installation is just an RPM, and it's for people that use Debian. Use Alien, and then you just have your OpenOffice native. And because OpenOffice don't have dependencies, you can just install it on every distro. So you don't really need anything else. So.
Just something I'm curious about: how big is the code base for OpenOffice actually?
Oh yeah, it's huge. Yeah, it's enormous. I actually downloaded the source code. It's about, I think it's about 300 megs. It will go up to like probably 500 megs of code when you unzip it. So yeah, it is huge. It's about 5 million lines of code, from what I heard.
Okay, that's huge.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, and how old is this code base?
Well, it dates pretty much till the 80s, basically, which is when Star Basic started using it. But the problem is not that. The problem is that the code base has grown in complexity ever since version 2 came out. It's very complex. So right now it's creating like a big struggle within the developer, with the OpenOffice developing community, because half of them want to build new stuff on OpenOffice and half of them want not to include new stuff. I mean, you have to remember that you're including GoldScript within OpenOffice, you're including Python within OpenOffice, including GCC, the compiler. So it's just a ton of things that they just jump in and just get in inside. And on the flip side, they have the no dependency policy, so they just get it inside the source code, or the source tree, rather. So yeah, that's why it's getting very complex. Actually, when you go to OpenOffice, you can actually download an OpenOffice with a Java runtime environment inside. So you don't need to download Java on a separate download. So yeah.
I have to remember that.
Yeah.
But, you know, you mentioned the Fedora, and I've been running Fedora 7 when was it released? I think about 2 weeks by now. And people who have known me and seen me around the forums will probably remember that I used to be a big fan of SUSE and also OpenSUSE, the distribution. But since Novell made that patent agreement with Microsoft, I've been pretty sour about SUSE and Novell. So I think when Debian 4.0 came out, Edge, I decided to give it a shot and used that for about a month after ditching OpenSUSE 10.2. And it was pretty good, but there were some packages that was just outdated. Not because Edge was just a few months old by now, but because they weren't updated properly before the Edge release. For example, that's a KDE application that I really like. That's called Basket, and it was like version 0.5. Well, version 1.02 is out. So I ended up having to compile a bunch of applications, which was a little annoying, you know. So I decided to ditch Debian and try Fedora, since Fedora 7 looked really, really nice. And
right.
I'm pretty happy with it, because I've gotten to be a big of a free software person. I really, I think there's only two proprietary things I use, and that's my BIOS and the Java virtual machine. So Fedora is big into the ideas of free software, so I decided to check that out. And and with Fedora 7, they actually have a specific KDE version of Fedora, or KDE Spin as they call it, which is an installable live CD that you can download, and it gives you a pre-configured KDE setup with, it actually gives you KOffice out of the box, and it has all the great KDE applications and stuff, and so you can quickly get up and running of it. And just to Mr. Fessenden, yeah, you can actually install Fedora with one CD. No more, no 5 CD install, even though that hasn't been the case for years. Even with Fedora 7, you could do it with 2 CDs. Just have to get that off the chest.
Yeah.
Yes. So, Barrel is included on the KDE Live CD. I don't know why you want to include such an unstable pile of shit, but that's just me. But,
why you don't like Barrel?
No, I hate it. I hate it.
Why?
Because it's just unstable. I mean, I have an IBM ThinkPad laptop with an ATI R200 chip, and
well, that's your problem.
That's free software drivers for those. It works fine. But Barrel is just unstable as all hell.
ATI is crap.
This chip has open source drivers, and it was actually used some specific.
Well, they have crappy open source drivers because the hardware is crap. So it's not the, I mean, I've been running Barrel, and I also have an ATI for about maybe 4 months now, and I don't have any problems with it. And I also got a Linux club here in Guadalajara in Mexico, and they all run in Barrel, and they seem pretty happy with it. I don't see anybody being complaining about Barrel so far. And most of the time, I don't see Barrel crashing. So I get unstable solutions, but not depending on the Barrel side. It will be depending on for example, Java applications. They don't render well under an XGL interface. And that, again, is not on Barrel. It will be more on XGL. Same thing with some other, I don't remember the name of the toolkit, but, I think it was WX widgets, I'm not sure, but I have some glitches on those toolkits, but it was a different issue. It wasn't Barrel in itself.
Actually, it is Barrel, because AIGLX is an extension of Xorg, and XGL, which is an X server.
Yeah, but I could have Compass also having the same thing.
Well, I have had problems with Compass. I'm not saying Barrel is just shit. I can't stand Compass either. I mean, both of them, I think, is just toys, experimental things. That's my opinion.
Yes, it's experimental in the sense that it's something new, but so was the menus in 1998. You know.
But true. Let's look at KDE 4 again for a minute.
Yeah.
KDE 4's window manager, KWin, will have a compositing functionality which is similar to the compositing functionality you see in Barrel.
Yeah, but what are you getting for?
You'll have that built in.
You're just getting transparency
and a bunch of effects.
Have you checked out Matisse?
I think Jutland showed me some screenshots of it.
I mean, Matisse is actually a whole lot of functionality in the sense that you can actually manipulate the UI to create your own UIs and then work your application the way you want it. So you will actually be like cutting and dragging around the buttons on the toolbars and just modifying the way they behave and saving it as a custom UI without even knowing anything of code, just with the mouse. You know, you're changing the whole application just cutting and pasting, basically. So that's pretty cool. And if I see stuff actually starting to pour from one with, I don't know, how do you call it, window manager? I don't think it's a window manager, but let's say these 3D layers from one to the other, I think they can work themselves out. And now the Barrel, for example, is part of Compass back again. I think there's going to be a lot more stability in this in the next versions. But once that said, I mean, I don't know if you heard the Linux Action show, and it was pretty cool that what this guy was saying was that there was a moment in time when Vista was coming out that we could have come up with Barrel or Compass, which are pretty much 1 year old applications, and we could have just natively in all our distros just come out and say, this is what we've been working for the past year, and it's pretty much more than what Vista will provide, and arguably what OS X is providing. So I think that was a big step that we didn't took. I mean, I agree with him. It was one big step that we decided not to. And what we said, the excuse was that we was unstable. But, well, so does the other things that are stable on a distribution, like, for example, the network manager, for example. It was unstable back then. And most of the things might be unstable
right now.
Yeah, but
network manager doesn't crash your X server.
That's true, but then you can get fallbacks. And Xorg is not the most robust application on the Linux layer, let me tell you. So, I mean, if we go by that policy, then we shouldn't put X on Linux distros because they crash every other update. You remember about 1 year ago, a lot of people update their Ubuntu whatever. And I don't use Ubuntu, but I heard that they were going this upgrade. They will upgrade the Xorg, and they will crash their X.
Well, that was the Ubuntu maintainer's fault. That was one. It was those guys that took a dump because that was not X's fault. That was because the Ubuntu maintainer
put the wrong
patch. I
don't think that makes any difference
for
the user.
No, but it's but you know. I heard what Brian on the Linux Action Show. I heard what he said, and I completely disagree with him. Because if you try and use Barrel and Compass, for example, something like multi-monitor setups, you run into tons of problems. If you just run it on a regular desktop for like 5 minutes, it works fine. But if you start going into advanced situations, which...
But so if you run the GNOME on a Pentium 2 machine, I mean, you're talking right. About hardware-specific differences. If I tried to run GNOME on a Pentium 2 machine, I would have a whole lot of problems.
Well, slowness, not because it's unstable.
What's the difference?
Because the system is just... GNOME runs on a Pentium 4 just very slowly. I've had Barrel crash on my laptop because it's just unstable.
Well, I haven't had Barrel crash on my laptop, and I don't think it's stable. I mean, I think that it's just basically your hardware, not really the... I don't know what... I just see so many hardware because I'm on a club, so I see people coming in every day with different hardware. I cannot say Barrel is stable. He's unstable.
I guess. Well, so, I personally think it's unstable, and I'm not going to change my position on that because I've had my fair share of problems with it. But that's just me, of course. I'm sure other people have. Because I'm all for including Barrel in a distro, but it has to be stable before that. Because... yeah, because they've been adding plugins like every day to make new effects, and that's not how you get stability. Stability you get by actually going through the code and looking for bugs and squashing bugs without adding a new feature at the same time you fix a bug, because then you just introduce a new bug.
But then again, how are you going to advance if you're holding yourself for every single bug? I mean,
that's
every
not what I'm
will
saying.
Have bugs.
Sometimes you have, to, at some point in time, you have to decide on a feature set, bug fix that, and release that. You just can't keep on adding things all the time. At some point, you have to stop, bug fix, and make things stable, and then get that out of the way. And then you can continue making all kinds of crazy stuff in an unstable branch, for instance. This is a normal procedure for any software engineering process, even for Microsoft and even for Apple. At some point, they decide on a feature list and just go with it.
Right.
And Compass and Barrel should do that as well, I think. But anyway, back to my Fedora experience. The Red Hat Liberation Fund is actually in Fedora's repository, so it's easy to install. It's just a yum install away, so if you want to check out the Liberation Funds and you're running Fedora 7, just look for Liberation Funds in the NYUM and you'll find it.
Cool.
It does help. It helps significantly when you've been viewing pages that's designed for IE, because these funds, Liberation Funds, they look pretty much exactly like the Microsoft web fonts, which is a good thing.
Is it?
So, well, because some web pages doesn't display properly unless you have the proprietary Microsoft fonts installed on your GNU Linux system. So with having a free clone of those fonts, you don't have to use those proprietary fonts.
Yeah, I'm not that big fan, so I usually can't tell. That's pretty much like audio, like a CD audio file, and somebody that just don't care. It will sound the same for the other guy. Yeah.
True. But anyway, Fedora 7, good stuff. Go check it out, fedoraproject.org.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. So what else is on the plate?
A bit of news. Unlike the four regular suspects on the show, I actually read the news, which is partly a joke because I know they have work and families to do, and I just have my computer.
They had to change diapers.
Yeah, that's right. But, you know, it was, as I said, it was also a joke. But before we go into the news, because I want to do a little bit of a precursor discussion, as a continuation of something the guys kind of joked around at on the last week's episode. Alexandro, are you open source or free software?
You see, I don't know. I have asked that myself. I've been pro free software in the sense of the mentality, but I cannot say that I'm a completely free software user because I also use non-free software. Then again, that is arguably because, well, what do you define free software? Is it GPL exclusive? Because if it's GPL exclusive, you have to take out OpenOffice to start with because it's LGPL.
Free Software Foundation has a free software definition, and it doesn't say GPL exclusively. It just says a software that gives users these four freedoms, as Richard Stallman would say. This is free software.
That I also run Opera as my main browser. So I guess I'm not. I also have whatever for media playback or whatever. So I guess I am a free software guy and by word, but not by action. But also, I have to say that if I actually had the open the free software alternative, I would go for the free software alternative. And if I have like the free software alternative and the open source alternative, I will go for the free software alternative. So I guess that's my point. I just wish everything was free software.
Yeah, true. So do I. And for myself, I'm pretty much of a lot of a free software guy because not for the same reason as say Richard Stallman is, because for example here in Denmark a couple of months ago, there was a new anti-terrorism plan came into effect, and now the police have full rights to if they get the court's permission, they can monitor any internet connectivity in Denmark that they wish to, because of tracking terrorists. But that's also, I think, in an invasion of privacy, because you just get the court's word on it and you can surveil anyone you want. And a lot of people were upset about that, and actually a specific GNU Linux Live CD came out to where you that would run Tor out of the box, or would anonymize you. So for me, the reason I really pretty much insist on free software is because I want the best privacy as possible. So for example, I will not use any proprietary encryption algorithm, because who's to say the NSA doesn't have a back door in it? You can't tell if it's proprietary. So for me, Free software is very important.
On that topic, but you're talking about, I mean, would that make any difference on open source? Because you're saying
I'm not talking
that...
about open source. Well,
okay.
I'll get to that. Because as I said earlier, there's only two proprietary things that I use, and that's the BIOS is inside my computer's motherboard, because I have a 10-year-old computer and there's no Linux BIOS support for that, so I can't use a free BIOS. So there's no way to run these computers without that stupid proprietary BIOS. But since it's on a chip on the motherboard, for all I know, it could just as well be a circuit. So it's not that big of an issue. But since the chip is writable and you can replace it, I would really prefer to have a free BIOS. But I can live with this stupid proprietary BIOS until that day comes.
Now, that's one thing. How much would you pay to become free? Because you're arguing and you put in an excuse about the BIOS. Well, just get a new motherboard. I mean, really, how expensive is it?
It's about $100, but I have like 15 computers, and if you got the multiply 100 times 15. Plus, some of these computers are like Pentium 2 machines, so you can't even use an AMD 64 motherboard in that, no systems.
Okay, I'll give you that.
For example, on the point of,
this component of my computer doesn't run, so for that reason, I won't run Linux. It sounds a little stupid because on a Mac base, if you were switching from Windows to OS X, it's not one component; it's the whole computer. You know what I mean?
True.
So if you're able to buy a whole new computer to change to this OS, why can't you just buy a new component for this for your computer to run Linux on it? If that's what it's all coming to. Like the broadband chip.
Yeah, that's my
get a PCMCI.
That's my argument as well. But I'm not talking about right now. I'm not talking about other people in the world. I'm just talking about myself and why I'm a big free software person. So, and I will admit I do use Java. And the reason I can make this exception about Java is because ever since Java first came out, you could actually under a very restrictive license, although. You could get the source code for Java. You could actually read the source code yourself and check for backdoors if that was what you wanted to do. And we have been able to do that for a long time. For example, if you wanted to run Java on FreeBSD until about a year ago, you could modify it.
You can create your own virtual machine, yeah.
Until about a year or two ago, I can't remember exactly when it was, if you wanted to run Java applications on FreeBSD, you had to go download the source code for Java from Sun's website, put it into a specific folder, run a script that would build it, and add some BSD patches, and it was a pain in the butt because of Sun's restrictive licenses. So,
But doesn't Blackdown used to do that, though?
Well, Blackdown is proprietary as well. That's an IBM thing. In any case, you have been able to get the source code for Java, and since my main objective for insisting on free software is privacy, I can make a little exception about Java, since Sun has open sourced the vast majority of the code for Java, although there are some pretty big chewy pieces left to replace, under the GPL, it's kind of a little bit of an encouragement in that area, so I can make an exception about Java. So I'm pretty much a free software person. I also believe in the same ideas that Richard Stallman would tell you about, like the ethics of sharing with your neighbor and all that stuff.
Right. And well, what can I tell you, though, right now that you're talking so much about Java, is that it's basically all politics, man. I mean, I'm in the OpenOffice community, and OpenOffice is part of StarOffice, which is in itself part of Sun. And it's all about the politics within the company. And I can tell you that Sun is basically changing his whole mindset about free software. I mean, they are working towards completely do all the Sun technology on GPL. And that's not just saying open source, it's saying free software. On the flip side, I think they are becoming more participant of the GPL 3, for example, they're a big player on the GPL3, and it might come some agenda behind it. So, it's a give and take, basically. Yes, they are changing, but they are also making GPL change. It's kind of like you touch them, they touch you, you know?
Exactly.
So.
And that's a perfect segue, because the reason I asked you whether you were an open source person or a free software person is because some of the news stories that have come up this week and a few weeks ago relate to GPL v3, and so I just wanted to make sure where you and I stand on this issue. So, I want right now, and I want everybody in the IRC to participate with me in this, Sandros, you suck balls. They just basically bend it over and let Bill Gates fuck them in the ass. I mean, they signed a Novell-style patent agreement with Microsoft.
Right, yeah.
So, Sandros, you need to die in hell. Oh, maybe that's too harsh a statement, but still, I slammed my fist in the table quite a bit over this. But the GPL version 3, the current draft of it, which you can read at gplv3.fsf.org, it has a grandfather clause that says that any, quote, discriminatory, unquote, patent agreements made before March 28th is in the clear. People that did that, like Novell, can still distribute GPL v3 software. However, Sandros' deal with Microsoft happened after March 28th, so the FSF's final draft of the GPL v3, if it also has this grandfather clause and not has it like change or something, which I really doubt it will be, Sandros just basically will be out in the cold. They won't be able to include any GPL v3 software because they have this agreement with Microsoft. And it's a 5-year deal, and I don't know if GNOME is going to move to GPL v3 automatically. KDE, I actually sent Aaron Saigo an email, and KDE is supposedly also moving to GPL v3. And since Sandros uses KDE, I think it would be a pretty sucky situation for them if they couldn't use like KDE 4.2 or something, which would be out in about 2 years. And I think
I don't think that will happen, though.
KDE,
I mean, that's in KDE theory. A lot of people say all these kind of things, like, oh, everything is going to change now, we're screwed up. But in the end, most of the time, nothing happens. I mean, get real. I mean, in the end, technology advances, whatever, and things get solved in the end. So, yeah, I mean, licensing is one thing. Reality is another. I mean, you're talking about licensing, you're talking about lawyer world, you know?
Yeah.
So according to lawyer world, we shouldn't be able to listen to music, you know? And we shouldn't be able to breathe under lawyer world, you know? But in reality, things just keep going their own way. I mean,
yeah. But you know, the FSF is quite serious about enforcing the GPL on the projects they control. The FSF owns all the copyrights for the GNU system, obviously. So they have copyright on every single, you know, like utilities like FLS, for example, the core utilities and GCC and all that stuff. In 5 years, do you want to use a 5-year-old version of GCC? I don't think so.
No, so, of course not. But in reality, would you? Would you use it? I mean, do you think it's going to come down to using that?
Using what?
I mean, if that happens, it will probably, I mean, what is going to happen is that probably you're going to get an alternative. And you don't even going to care because it will be included on your distribution. So the only thing you're really losing is the tacit knowledge of using all those components. Now, if you never use those components, then you don't really care. You know what I mean?
See, this is what I'm saying. Sandros won't be able to include anything that will be on the GPL v3. It's just out in the cold.
Yes, I understand that. But Sandros will develop their own thing, and they will be all right with that.
Well, Sandros has about 80 employees, I think. Could 80 people maintain the entire GNU system a fork of it? I don't think so. Even Novell shits their pants over that.
They probably won't, but they would either change their policy or, which is what the FSF really wants, or they will actually include some other things that will, I mean, because Sandros is a commercial desktop, they could license the whatever other software that will serve the same purpose.
True. But then but then again, the FSF is not out to make the FSF is wants to make sure that no company does like discriminatory patent agreements. That's like going back in time and looking at the black people's rights in America where they weren't allowed to do X, Y, and C. Microsoft is saying that you will be sued for because you're violating our patents. No, I don't believe Microsoft is going to sue anyone, but it's enough to like scare people and stuff. So there's a bunch of stuff with GPLv3 that will happen with Novell. But basically, I think I saw a good a funny article the other day that says that Sandros pretty much just threw in the towel and gives up because they signed this deal.
Yeah, and actually, you know, I also heard the same thing, but on a different industry, which is also the embedded system, which is the one that I talked before. I mean, most of the hardware have patents, and most of the hardware connects to the software, actually. All the hardware connects to the software. So what does GPL3 will mean for that?
We're talking
about Linux on the cell phone, but the cell phone in itself, the hardware is really patented driven.
Yeah, but the GPLv3 does not cover hardware patents, it covers software patents.
Well, yes, but then again, what do you think it connects to the hardware? I mean, if you have a software layer, like let's say the BIOS, what will be the BIOS for the cell phone? That will be patent too.
Yeah, Pat ought to get Eben Moglen on so that we can hear something from a lawyer, because the thing about the GPLv3, I think it's a good improvement. The thing about it is it's more of a legal document than GPLv2 was. It's much, much harder to read and understand. It's more like lawyer speak, as I call it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's one thing I don't like about it, but that's pretty much the only thing I don't like about GPL version 3. And to all the GNOME users out there, GNOME, I have checked every part of GNOME, even the libraries. GNOME's licensing is GPL v2 or later. So if any GNOME users don't like GPL v3, you're in for a big surprise on June 29th when GPL v3 is supposed to come into effect.
Yeah, I also
big scare for all the GNOME users.
What's the word? Mass hysteria was going on when GPL2 came about. Everybody was saying that the world was coming to an end. And
yeah, everybody was like, oh my God, this is communism.
Yeah, yeah. So
Stalin has returned. Run for your lives.
Link is a terrible one. I mean,
too bad Madball 39.
Everybody's gonna be running Linux, and nobody's gonna remember what was they ranting about at one point, because nothing is gonna matter in the end. That's my the voice of experience, because just history keeps repeating in itself, you know? So you got to say, like, hold on, I lived this before, nothing happened, let's move on.
Yeah, exactly. You know? I think in 10 years or 20 years when GPLv4 is in the drafts, and people are going to say, oh, well, we have the nice and friendly GPLv3, everybody likes the GPLv3, and then they're going to curse around about GPLv4. So that's my prediction for the next 20 years.
Yeah.
So, but enough talk about Sandros. I think we've given them a good kicking by now, as just Slug Radio likes to say. So, screw you, Sandros. Big F you. did you see the story about Jonathan Swartz from Sun inviting Linus Torvalds over for dinner?
No, I didn't. What happened?
Well, Linus, or Linus, I guess it's how you pronounce his name.
Linus.
He posted on a Linus, yeah. Well, I speak Danish, so I can. It's pretty much Linus in Danish, or
Swedish. I know. I speak Spanish, and it's pretty much Linus. It's just these American people. They break every other language they touch.
Yeah, Americans break the language. Yeah. But anyway, it was because Linus posted on the Linux kernel mailing list and pretty much lambasted Sun for their open source policies, mm-hmm. as he called it. You should, if you go, just go to Google or CNET or any of these big news sites, you'll find a reference to, to this mailing list post. And yes, Mad Dog, GTK is going GPLv3. Just replying to someone in the IRC, but yeah, Linus posted a very critic attack on Sun, and then Jonathan Swartz blogged about it on his blog, which is actually quite encouraging to see, because the CEO of a large company blogging, that's an unusual sight, I think. So Jonathan basically Sun is doing X, Y, and C, and thanked Linus for getting for giving credit where credit is due, which Linus did do. And then he explained a few things, and in the end ended up inviting Linus over for dinner, but they have one condition: you bring the wine. you can just go to Google and search for Jonathan Swartz blog. It's a pretty good blog posting. It's actually quite hilarious. And Linus actually kind of, I think he told CNetNews.com, I think they did an interview with him, and he basically said something like, while Sun has a few gotchas in the licensing, bring wine, it does sound like a good offer, he said. So sounds like Linus might be taking Jonathan up on his offer of dinner, so.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear that conversation. Too bad I probably can't.
There probably is going to be a lot of gossiping around it. But yeah, that is pretty much what I was saying. Our Sun mentality and is changing, and it will be interesting if actually Sun reactivate themselves. I mean, they just came out with this JavaFX technology. They're proponing of open standards with the open documents. Their archetype, the open document. It could be behind a whole lot of other open source, open standards, I'm saying, like SVG or whatever. They have, the Java, box run, the Java multimedia framework, they run natively on Ogg, which is something that I found out on that Play Ogg campaign. Java is pretty much the only option around to have an Ogg library embedded in your programming language. So
cool.
I think they're changing for good, and it will be interesting if that actually repositioned themselves, because they lost a lot of ground back in the 2000-2003 time space. I mean, their server market crashed, their technology became obsolete, nobody likes Java, and I don't like Java in itself, and actually comes back to what Eric Raymond said when he asked for Java to be, in this case, open source, because Java didn't want to give control out, and they lost because they didn't want to give control. I mean, Sun, yeah. Sun didn't want to give out the control, and that in the end came back to bite them. If Java had become GPL, or open source back in the 2000 era, at least Miguel de Canfas came out saying that he wouldn't spend time developing Mono. He will actually focus his attention on Java and trying to make it run faster or whatever it needs. So, because basically what they were saying is that there is no free software programming language besides C or C++, but it's not like what it was coming up with C# in that point and Java. There was nothing in the open source community to compare to that.
Yep.
So it would be interesting if they had made that choice back in 2000 they might have been right now the new, I don't know, I don't want to speculate, but they would have been more than what they're today, I think.
Yeah. But one thing I do want to mention about Sun, because they are doing a bunch of good things, but that Theodore Rudd, which is the leader of OpenBSD, and also is the main guy behind the OpenSSH, which all of us use to administer our Linux and BSD boxes. And he replied to Jonathan's answer to Linus Torvalds and basically said that Sun has been very, very, very closed about hardware specifications for like their UltraSpark workstations and servers, so that because OpenBSD has asked Sun on numerous occasions, and Linux developers have also done the same thing for hardware specifications for other things than the CPU in the Spark machines, because Sun has released the latest Spark designs under the LGPL, but hey, great, you can run your code on the processor, but you can't access any devices in the system. That's just like, right, because...
they're moving. I mean, what I'm thinking is they're moving in a slow pace and step by step.
True.
Because,
yeah.
Like, maybe this is true because they just can't open source everything because they have partners, they have IP, and they have things that are holding them back. They cannot legally open source everything. But I heard, yeah, but even if it's Sun material, it could be outsourced at some point, you know, some specifications of some part of the specification, or licensed to any other people. So now, you know, but what I remember a conversation, I think it was on Log Radio with Simon Phipps, and he was saying about the future of Spark now that they license it, the specs on LGPL, they actually have cameras, like digital cameras that will have a Spark chipset. Now, I know it sounds pretty weird, but that's what he said. I really can't remember. It was about a year ago, that interview, so I can't fully remember what he exactly said. But he was talking also about, it was around the time they did the partnership with Ubuntu to bring Ubuntu servers to the enterprise.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, the long-term support and all that.
Yeah. But actually, the one thing I do want to say, because Sun has a project called OpenSpark, and what this is basically the Spark design and Spark processor specifications released under the LGPL. It's only for the processors. It's not for, like, the PCI host bridges in the actual machines. So, for example, OpenBSD has had a number of problems. For example, they had to heavily reverse engineer some chip to be able to support it on some of the newer Spark machines, and they have had a conversation with Sun in the past, which was one of Theo's points, because Jonathan was positioning Sun as improving and getting open and stuff like that. But and certainly that is happening with a lot of their software, but their hardware is still very closed. So, but that's just sure that's just an angle I think is important to consider into this whole picture, because Sun is a hardware company at the core, you know, they do develop a lot of software, but they still, I think, I'd argue Sun makes them the majority of their money from server sales, you know, physical hardware.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But also, another thing that Linus said, according to, in his mailing list post, is that if Sun puts Solaris under the GPLv3, that might help in convincing him that the kernel, Linux kernel, should be GPLv3 as well. He didn't say that he would remove the kernel to GPLv3 or even attempt it, because he can't do it all by himself, but because he does, Linus Torvalds does think that GPLv2 is, quote, simply the better license, unquote. But, so he needs some convincing to that GPLv3 is a good idea. But he did say that if Solaris came under GPLv3, then it might be worth it putting Linux under GPLv3 so that they could share code, because it would be good for both Solaris and the Linux kernel. For example, Solaris could get a bunch of hardware support from Linux, and Linux could get CFS or dtrace from Solaris. which are interesting technologies. CFS, for example, I could really use, and it's coming in FreeBSD, so that's always good.
CFS?
What? Really, ZFS, maybe the Canadians would say. It's a file system that's somehow...
Okay, right. Got it. Yeah. Actually, it was a rumor that the new OS X was going to run CFS.
Yeah, apparently they were only... I think Apple only wanted to use it for their big storage servers, but... And I think they said it's going to be a read-only option in Leopard, but I don't want to give Apple more free press. They can advertise themselves.
True.
Pricks.
Well, it's the same speculations, the same OS speculations, such as what Vista was coming up with, WinFS and yada, you know.
The
thing is, it's funny because all these little tiny things, there is a note on mainstream media and everybody's talking about it, while on Linux world we have all these other things going on and nobody knows about it. For example, I never knew what UnionFS was until recently. Everybody is really excited about Fuse on the open source end, but on the mainstream developing media, nobody knows what Fuse is, for example. You know?
Yeah.
And Fuse is incredible. And it's just basically that we don't get the press or have the money to push the press out. But even from a technical point of view, there is a commercial mainstream audience and there is the underground audience, let's say. And I think a lot of people don't even like. If they knew what Linux had, and I'm not talking about users, I'm talking about developers, if they knew, experienced what open source and free software have as a developer, they will be like, why I didn't know about this before, you know? Most of the developers think they waste their whole life once they meet free software.
That's right.
So it's funny, you know. And at the same time, you say why media don't talk about it because this is so great. And it's just one of the things that really gets my nerves, you know, because they paint out every single gossip as being like the shit, you know, like WinFS and metadata and stuff like, oh, innovation and blah, blah, blah. And the reality is like, dude, you're not, it's vaporware, you know? They ain't really doing it.
More like shitware.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
We'll get on Uncle Steve pants and shit, you know?
I can imagine. I have this picture of like, or not a picture, but
I don't want to.
I can imagine. I can imagine that at Apple's conference the other day. I can imagine once Steve shows something on the screen that he has like 10 big slides or something. I think he showed, and then I can imagine like every freaking up. Apple fanboy in the audience, like every time a new slide comes out, they have a new load in their pants.
True.
Imagine that. Yeah.
It was funny.
Bad Leo Laporte was right on the front seat.
Yeah. Actually, I've been listening to Leo's, and Leo is not really that much of a fanboy. I kind of have to rephrase that. He's a fanboy, but he's not that hardcore. And he actually is funny because when he's in face of true fanboys, he actually becomes the devil's advocate. Like, I actually went through the pain of listening to MacGrade Weekly, and it's funny because he's actually the iPhone basher on the show. And, it, of course... I think it's just personas that he adopts depending on the show. Because at the same time, he becomes the Apple fanboy on Windows Weekly, for example. It's just personas. It's funny, yes, the way they do this. But I like Leo. I mean, I guess I forgive him for being ignorant. But But he's a good guy. I mean, it is a shame that, well, he just don't know, you know?
Yeah.
It's like a mirror barrier, you know? Once you cross it, you're on the other side, and you're... It's like a matrix, basically. You're on the other side. You're aware of all this reality and all these things that you thought it was a big thing, and in the end, it really doesn't matter anymore, you know?
Yeah, true.
Like Vista.
Yeah, like Vista. Virus infestation, spyware, Trojan horses, and adware. That's
true.
That's V-I-S-D-A.
Yeah, but a lot of people think they're getting this good product, and then you're like, dude, why? How? You know? I mean, first, it costs money that you don't have because you're a broke college-ass student, you know?
Second of all, man,
your hardware just went to trash. I mean, that core quadro-core Intel Pentium whatever is running like a Pentium 3 just because you're running this big monolithic operating system. Because it's not just the operating system. Now you have to load the antivirus, which usually set the whole generation of processors back. Speed-wise. And then you start getting all this crap on your box that, I mean, it's just nasty, man. I'm like, you get all these, like, huge applications. Like, you heard of Adobe, the new Adobe CS, whatever, Macromedia shit? That's like $1,200. You know? Of what? Of the same thing with a couple new features. I mean, once you're, like, in that reality, you're like...
One more flavor flu.
You don't even know HTML, man. Why are you spending $1,200 on Dreamweaver? I mean, you really want to just cry, you know? You know what I mean? So...
It's amazing how stupid
and the problem is what they think. They think if they get that, they will get good at it. You know? That's the funny thing. They're like, okay, I got this cereal box. Now I'm going to be, that cost me a lot of money, so I have to learn a lot because it costs a lot of money. It's like, how one thing relates to the other, you know?
Yeah.
That's like buying a really expensive hammer with gold and ice on it. That is not going to make you a good, how do you call it, whatever, carpenter, whatever you need the hammer for, but, you know, it has no relationship. Oh, well, that's my rant.
We all need a rant at times.
Yeah.
Dan, that's actually good you did one, because Dan hasn't done one in a while. Lazy bastard.
Dan needs to get on the school topic again. That rant was, like, really, really good, you know?
An enlightening rant.
I have my own little school rant. Not really school, but education. Because this is geo news, or just related to Mexico. Probably people don't care, but well, Mexico is not the richest country in the world, yet they're spending like, I think it was like about $30 million, which is not a lot actually for a budget, but they were spending $30 million on, guess on what? On blackboards. They were going to put these digital blackboards all over schools, and you're talking about putting schools that have no electricity on the first place. You know what I mean? But they were going to put, they bought a whole bunch of Sun servers, a whole bunch of hardware, you know, like sound systems, woofers, and PC on every single classroom of all these government schools that, like I said, most of them don't even have electricity, let alone, you know, internet. And they were spending all that money. And guess what? that wasn't even the expensive part. The expensive part was the software, which was this license Encarta modified to put whatever the education plan is here, the content of the education plan. So picture that. You know?
It's ridiculous, man.
It was completely, and I'm a little bit hurt because in the sense that that might stigmatize technology in education because it's clearly a failure. So that might just say people not adopting the one laptop per child, which I think is a great thing, because they think technology and education don't go together, or they think it's a waste of time and money, and I just
all about
can't
the money, man.
Yeah, that's what happened. But that's my own geo rant, geo specific rant.
Jay-Z is the president.
Oh, is your country doing anything like that?
Doing what?
I don't know. Some education technology stuff. Because I know every little country has their own, I don't know, like technology initiative on education.
Ah. Well, you, unlike Denmark is a rich country. Let's put it that way. There's of course a few poor people here and there, but Denmark is generally a very rich country. I think. I don't exactly know where in which position in terms of the richest countries where we stand, but Denmark is a rich country, and I think lots and lots of Danish schools. I can't think of one Danish school except some kind of really weird schools that don't have electricity. Every Danish school pretty much has electricity, and pretty much all of them have computers. I mean, all the big ones and all, even the smallest ones have computers. Okay, I mean, some of those computers are a little bit old, but still they have computers that are semi-usable. And I say semi-usable because Windows 98, after 6 years, not even 6 years, but like 9 or 8 years of usage, it's pretty much a wasteland of crap. So, I mean, Denmark is... Oh, it's depressing to even think about. We're so locked into Microsoft that it makes the United States look good. I mean, there's literally no Linux users in the public sector in Denmark. Only for maybe a server and some back office, but it's so rare you find anything open source or free software.
Actually, I have some comments about it because one of the Danish guys in the open office community, he had an audience with the, I don't know, I'm trying to look for the blog post, but he had an audience on the Denmark government on adopting open documents. And it's funny because it's actually being quite well documented. And maybe you want to have a read because, well, it affects you directly. And maybe he can use some help. But yeah, it's pretty interesting the way he describes the government as, they're being a little bit open, or at least that's the sense he's getting. But, I think, he kind of thinks that, it's a very tiny shot. You know, because there's not that many parties behind him that they can support his point. I mean, it makes sense. They listen to him, but he needs more support from I guess bigger entities. So I probably put that on the show notes.
Another thing is, of course, Microsoft hasn't taken lightly to that open document is being discussed. So they have been pressuring the government with a quote open unquote XML.
Yeah.
And
in the States, it's actually getting a lot of track, the Open Document Initiative, as opposed to Open XML. I mean, two big news this week. One was in New York. New York State wants to adopt open documents. for their state government, which is big because now you have New York, California, and Texas, which are pretty much the bigger states in the United States adopting open documents, or at least having a bill to implement open documents. And yeah, that will set a trend, a very big trend. I think Michigan and, of course, Massachusetts, they also have open documents bills already in place. Massachusetts being the only one that actually had it, not just in bill, but they already implemented. So I think, and the U.S. hasn't even been that strong as opposed to Europe on adopting these open documents. So I think this topic is pretty much interesting for anybody trying to say, well, things are not changing, I will never change, and everybody's locked down into Microsoft.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, open standards have actually been a significant discussion in Denmark. I'll admit to that, but open source or free open source, as people say, free software, that's not even on the radar. I mean, that people did.
Is it maybe because Microsoft, the people haven't come in contact with it?
Well, that and because everything uses Microsoft. I mean, on some schools you can't even use a freaking Macintosh because you
right. That's what I'm saying. People have not been in contact with open source as opposed to, I don't know, other countries like Spain, for example, or the northern countries like Sweden and Finland and Norway. Because they are big.
Since Denmark is a rich country,
we don't. The Czech Republic used a lot of open source. But it's interesting because, well, actually one thing that happened in Eastern Europe, the Romanian president, he invited Bill Gates to, I don't know, Bill Gates went to Romania for some reason just a couple months ago, and he actually said, thanks to piracy, our country is so advanced on the IT industry. Right in front of Bill Gates, but the guy, he just didn't make any comments. But it's true, he just put it out in the air. He's like, he's not the brightest one, the brightest president out there. But yeah, he basically made that statement, which is just reaffirming the truth. Everybody knew about the truth, but it's pretty good to see it in black and white, you know, copy the news.
Yeah.
Right, but for example, Romania, because it's not really a rich country, same as other countries like Czech Republic, they are big users of open source. They have a lot of developers in open source, and we see it right there in the OpenOffice community. We have tons of developers coming from Eastern Europe. So, I don't know. I guess when you don't have anything to lose, you just don't care.
Yeah, like I was going to say, Denmark is a rich country. People would rather spend money on Microsoft products than try and use OpenOffice, which doesn't cost anything for the actual
program. No, they're trying to start their brain and actually think that there's an alternative.
Yeah,
you know,
people just want to
think. Yeah.
Yeah. For example, I think it's the teachers don't want to. I once spoke to a teacher about OpenOffice and she was like, but the menu is 2 centimeters away. Well, that's not exactly what she said, but that's in a nutshell what she said. The menu was 2 centimeters away, then she apparently couldn't use an office suite. What bullshit, in my opinion.
Yeah, and when she see Office 2007, that there is no menu at all.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah, exactly. Where's my text changer? Or something like that. It's ridiculous,
so,
man. I'm getting depressed now. I want to move up onto a different subject.
Well, on a happier note, OpenOffice 2.2.1 was just released. Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, right now, just a few hours ago, I got the email saying that they've opened the repositories for final checkout. So we can just launch it every during this week. It's probably going to be a launch.
So that's cool. In the news.
Yeah. And I'm sending like changelog to the mailing list and stuff. There's a couple good things. So it's not a big incremental upgrade from 2.1, but it's still a good thing.
2.2 you mean?
Huh? Yeah.
2.2 you mean?
2.2.0, yeah, right.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, I saw and I was reading an article on Linux.com about it. There's a project out there, funded by a French telco called OpenWingo. And what they do is that they, there's a free software project called OpenWingo, and it produces a SIP client and also instant messaging client that's called Wingo Phone. And sadly, Devin couldn't catch an obvious 9&9 who has played with it, but he hasn't. He wasn't able to join us tonight because if he had, then I'd probably handed this topic to him. But Wingo Phone is basically like it looks very much like a free software version, but it's like a free software alternative for Skype, basically. That's what it pretty much looks like, but you can also use it for an asterisk server. I couldn't get it to work on my computer, so I couldn't test it out, but Dan said it worked great for him, so I think I'll just encourage people to go check that out. It's openwingo.org, I think. It looks pretty cool. I wish I could get it to work.
Cool.
Yeah, and I think it also does video, but you know, who besides 12-year-olds...
Hey, one thing I want to talk about... There's a
Who besides 12-year-olds needs webcams?
Yeah. One thing that I want to talk about is, like, have you noticed all these new tiny boxes coming out with Linux on it? Like, I just saw in Gizmodo yesterday, or was it the day after? It was a laptop, an Asus laptop that costs $200. It's very tiny. It runs a modified Linux that looks like Windows. And, well, it's tiny, but it has a keyboard. But also I see a whole new, like, launch of all these SBCs, single board computers, devices that will run Linux. One of them, I posted in the forum, is something like the Zombu, or something like that. That was like, I like the way that they are portraying the machine, because it's basically not just the box, but actually a vertical integrated service in which you get the box like you will get a cell phone, you will get a plan, you will pay a subscription. But that subscription will be not just the support, but also your whole backup system. Like, all your information won't reside on the box, it will reside on their services. So you will pay... Yeah, I saw it on the LTV, and I think it was a good idea. But also the spin-off of that is the other box that is kind of like a MythDB one. And I tried to search it on the forum. I saw it on PLLTS forums, but I couldn't find it. Do you remember that one? It was some small box running Ubuntu with MythDB, and you can just put it on your TV or whatever as a PVR.
No, I don't think so.
Oh, man.
Well, they
came around the same time when I did the post, which is the one that they showed in DLLTS. And now also the other, I guess, hackable ones are the one that Linux Reality talk a lot about, which is the Antus lock from Linksys. Do you know that little, it's like a backup, like a NAS, like a simple NAS for home users.
Oh yeah, you can hack it, right? Like the WRTCG router.
Right. So the thing the cool thing is that I'm seeing that all these new tiny boxes are coming out, and I'm just saying, is the future of computing in general become more, I guess, modularized? Like you will run small computers as opposed to one big desktop in one room. You will have all these tiny computers all over your house.
Well, that's something a lot of people are talking about. I personally believe that the personal computer, as it has been known since the 80s, I think I think still think that that is going to continue for many years to come, because for some people, a lot of people even here in Denmark don't even own a computer. I mean, I have 15 of them, but a lot of people don't even have one. Personal computers are something new even today. So, and let alone be like poor countries who don't even have a cell phone.
So no, but well, SVCs is about modularize. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know you have like an email device and a kitchen device and so on.
Yeah, you can have computers all over your house pretty much for the same price of one desktop. For example, if they all cost $100, you know?
I guess.
Winning history has desktop cost $100.
Yeah, that's
you know what I mean.
Or you can get a decent one on eBay for $100.
I mean, and if they are moving to push the price point to $100, then what do you think it will create on the user space? And especially when you have all this content moving to the internet in itself. I mean, your desktop applications are moving to the internet, your storage is moving to the internet, your pictures, whatever, is all moving to the internet, then you don't really need your computer, you just need an interface kind of thing. And if you have an interface to your content that costs $100, then you will probably put that interface all over your house, all over your workplace, whatever. So like kind of like commoditized desktops. I mean, you won't need a big chunky desktop. It will all be just basically on the cloud, and you will just manage through little tiny interfaces. Yeah.
Don't mention cloud on this show, because Dan will create one.
Well, the tubes.
The tubes. Yeah, the tubes as well.
Yeah. So I'm just saying, and the pretty cool thing about it is that it's all pretty much running on the back of Linux.
Yeah.
Linux is pretty much a driver for all these tiny devices.
Yeah, and maybe someday some people will delve into it and then discover that it's Linux, and then hopefully see the benefits of free software. I mean, maybe if you throw rocks at 1,000 people, at least one person is going to pay attention to where that rock came from.
I'm pretty positive about it. I mean, I actually run a web server on Northic. That Northic is a company that have one of these tiny devices. I mean, the box cost me $120. It has no fan, no hard drive. You just have a 2G car flash. And in that 2G car flash, I can run a desktop, a whole bunch of applications, a web server, and an FTP server, and of course SSH, VNC. I don't even have a monitor. I just plug it directly to the router. I just VNC to it, and I just have the display on my laptop. And because it's so tiny, it doesn't consume any power. It's like an appliance. I just plug it to the router, and it looks like part of the router in itself, and it's like embedded web server that I can just put whatever.
Cool.
Yeah.
I also run a web server at home. That's like the first thing you do when you set up your own server, right? You run a web server at home. I run like I probably showed you, I run a wiki at home on my OpenBSD box. So.
Yeah, but you're running a web server on a car flash.
A car flash, no.
Yeah, on an SD flash, man.
A car flash.
Well,
that's actually quite handy in case the RIA comes busting your ass. Because would they be looking for pirate covers in your car light? I don't think so.
Although you cannot use the magnet trick. You know the magnet trick?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, the one that you put in the door. It will magnetize the hard drive when they go out.
Yeah.
Oops, there goes the kiddie porn.
don't do that. None of us are that sick. At least none of us. Yeah. None of us on the IRC are that low, I think.
Are you afraid of sex?
What?
Are you afraid of sex or what?
No, I'm afraid of kiddie porn. That's what I'm afraid of.
Yeah, okay.
Not that I... Yeah. I'm not afraid of girls
anyway.
At all.
Alright.
I yelled at tons of girls.
I'm not saying you're afraid of it. You're the one saying that.
No, I'm not.
Well, you bring it in.
Okay, this has just gone down the gutter.
Okay, dude. Never mind, man.
Well, we don't have too much time left on this show, but I do want to mention that
I thought Riddlebox was going to come in.
Well, apparently he probably got his driver's license removed as well, so he's probably in jail by now. But a friend of mine who is who does translation work for the OpenSUSE project told me that on Sunday or Saturday the Amarok project will be releasing version 1.4.6, which is another maintenance release with bug fixes and stuff, and so people who are interested in Amarok or in testing it should go check out a subversion snapshot and file bugs, because that's very valuable during these small test periods, and I think I'll be taking a look at it too. So go
cool.
Check out Amarok. Definitely go check out Amarok. It's a great application, especially for. And I have dumped CastPod for Amarok, so now I use that to receiving podcasts, and it works really well, I have to say. So
I used to use Amarok, but right now I'm actually using. What am I using? I'm using Rhythmbox, but I'm not really using Rhythmbox that much because most of my listening is to podcasts, and I just use wget pipe and player, you know.
What more do you need?
Yeah. So I mean, it's a 2-hour thing. It's not like you have to switch and manage a whole bunch of MP3s. Each MP3 is like at least an hour long, half an hour long. You just need a player. You don't need a whole jukebox for that.
True. That's true.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So,
Definitely.
Hey, one thing that I want to come to, I put it on the forum, actually. That's what I know. So, should the Linux Link Tech Show sue the Linux Link Show, I guess? I mean, I just found that out. I just found out yesterday. There is a podcast called the Linux Link. Without the D, I guess. And that would bring very, very, I don't know. That might bring problems to the show, I guess. And
we just need Dan. We just need Dan to turn his ass against them, and then they'll run for their lives.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a good lookout because imagine they actually start getting a couple of shows. I mean, they just on show 11, so they just actually started. They started on January, this podcast. So it's just been running for 6 months. And they just have 11 shows. I don't know if they might be open to change the name. The problem is that if you tell them, can you please change your name, they come back with a lawsuit, then where do you move, you know? If at least you can trademark the name before you have a power position that you can negotiate. Well, actually, I want the trademark. You cannot change it because you're not dealing with a couple of guys. You're dealing with TimeSys, which is, I think it's a big company. I'm not really sure how big they are, really. But nevertheless, it's a for-profit company, so yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, if Pat and the others need money for the trademarking, I'm sure a couple of listeners, including myself, would be willing to help out with that. I mean, if you need a trademark.
Yeah, I mean, if it's just $400, $500, I think we can raise that. I mean, that money that you trademark the name.
Yeah, just $10 from 50 listeners. I mean, that's doable.
Yeah, just open a PayPal account then. $10.
Yeah, $10 is not that much. I mean, even I can afford that. That's unfortunate.
Yeah. So I think it will be up in the forums for a little while, that post, because it's pretty controversial. But I don't know.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, the best the best scenario is basically, well, that you're saying, oh yeah, guys, actually we did this because we listened to the show at one point and thought it was a pretty cool name, so we just copied.
and
now we can just change it or some find some no swing agreement, whatever, like Novella, Microsoft, and get over it.
No swing agreement.
So yeah,
it's too bad Riddlebox didn't come in because he said that he had a good shit story to tell.
Oh yeah, yeah, we missed that.
Yeah, I was gonna say we needed that on the bonus material.
True. Yeah. Yeah.
So before the show ends or before we come to an end, I do have something to bitch about because. Okay. I've been trying to set up my own Jabber server for a couple of months now, and I have to say, Jabber daemons, even though the protocols and that are all a standard format, that server daemons for Jabber are probably one of the most amazingly undocumented servers I've ever seen. I mean, this is like read a configuration file and try to figure out what the server does from the configuration file. There's literally no man pages that are decent to read, in my opinion. I mean, compared to like OpenBSD or FreeBSD's documentation, Jabber just scrubs the bottom. I mean, it's irritating.
Yeah, I think most of the documentation on the Jabber community happens on the mailing list.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
You have to think. I mean, how diverse is the community? If these only developers don't expect good documentation because there are no documentators within the community, you know what I mean? So you will only get people on the mailing list resolving questions, issues, compiling issues or whatever, and no documentation. Which is something that if you go to SUSE, SUSE has like their group of the documentators we know nothing about C++, but they are willing to write stuff for some. You know, they will go into the mailing list, read them up, get snippets, and put them into a document.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, yeah, Jabber, there are two major Jabber servers. I think one is Jabber D14, and the other one is Jabber D2. So, both of those, the documentation, it sucks. Actually, the one for Jabber D2 is okay, but still could use some much refinement. But,
I should belong to a couple of Jabber
people. Like the most documented server daemon in the world, Jabber is like the worst documented server daemon in the world.
Right.
Frustrating.
Well, you can write the wiki page at least after you put it.
Yeah. That's true. I mean, yeah. Well, anyway, we should probably wrap this thing up here pretty soon, and I want to say to everyone who's listening, I hope you can put up with us for about 3 more weeks, or at least with me. I don't know if you, JCA, could join in another week or two, but the guys needed a break, so they took a 4-week break, and I think Pat said he would be using some of this spare time to actually line up guests for like July and...
Actually, the day after tomorrow, I'm flying home, so I might be able to get on Skype because now I have a big upstream pipe, as opposed to here that I have a shitty upstream because it's wireless.
Yeah, upstream bandwidth is also always a problem, but whatever.
Yeah.
But I think we should wrap this up. I mean, we've been rambling for too long, and I'm getting tired. It's 4:30 in the morning, so I need to go catch a few wings. 4:30 in the morning. But thanks for listening, everybody. This has been the Linux Link Tech Show, episode 196. And to wrap this thing off in classic style, we're going to play a song called Destiny Trip by Falling You, and it's from Magnatune.com. So
and I didn't
you have
choose that,
that
song.
What?
And I didn't choose that song.
No, I did.
Just to get it on paper,
This is not Europop. I guarantee. So if Mr. Washko could get his lazy ass off and play the song, For this week, we're ghosts.
So is this when the awkward silence starts?
Yeah. Okay. So, bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you. That was track number one from the album Human by Falling You from Magnatune.com.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush.
Shut up. Just shut up. It's over.